I think the choir has already started chuckling because I brought up some very big books. I promise I'm not going to make you read all of them, or even try to read all of them to you. This is one of my very favorite books, which probably says a lot about me. It's Marion Hatchett's commentary on the American Prayer Book. So it's Marion Hatchett, who was a professor of liturgy at Swanee, wrote this on the American Prayer Book, which is, when printed, usually slightly smaller than the BAS, and this is definitely larger. I pulled it off my shelves this morning, even though we aren't using the American Prayer Book, because I wanted to see what it said about the history of the baptismal covenant, which is what we will renew in a few moments. That might be an optimistic take on how long the sermon will actually take, but we will just go through that here in a bit. Because Hatchett goes through and talks about both the theology and the history of why things came to be. And the baptismal covenant, which we will do, is really lifted and then slightly expanded from what the American Prayer Book did in 1979. And I love it. I absolutely love the baptismal covenant. And there's a whole paragraph here, which I will not force you to sit through, but it basically says that the covenant, the full five promises that show up in the American Prayer Book in the sixth, we added one, that show up in the Book of Alternative Services, are a revision or really sort of an expansion of a question that originated in the 1662 Book of Common Prayer. Now, our Book of Common Prayer, our BCP, is sort of a light revision of the 1662 one. And it contains a light revision of that same question, which reads, in our BCP, will you endeavor to keep God's holy will and commandments and to walk in the same all the days of your life? And the answer, which will sound familiar, is, I will, God being my helper. We took that question and we've sort of teased it out a bit. And you can probably, and I'm sure somewhere an academic has made a lot of ink about why that is. But one, I love the questions because they've teased it out. I think they're really beautifully written, and there's phrases and ways of expressing what it is I think we are called to do as Christians that they really sort of corner well. Persevere in resisting evil, and when you fall into sin, respect the dignity of every human being. Seek and serve Christ in all people. These are phrases that I think are worth returning to repeatedly. And I wanted to take this little bit to sort of talk about the history behind them, because I think as we go through them and when I talk with people about them, we very quickly recognize that this sentiment is undergirding all of them, a desire to keep God's holy will and commandments for all of our life, even when it's hard, and acknowledging that the only way we do this is with God's help. So we'll go through those in a bit. If you want to, you are more than welcome to take that half sheet home with you and post it somewhere so you can remember and reflect on those throughout your week and your year. We are going to come back and talk about other parts of baptism next week, because we actually will have baptisms next week. I'm very excited about that. We've got two little kids who are going to come join us next week with their family for our baptisms. So we're going to keep talking about baptism a lot. But baptism isn't just what we do when kids are little or when people first come to the church. It really is meant to shape our whole life. And I think the covenant and the questions that are laid out in it invite us into that in some really potentially deep ways. So when we do this in a minute, or a few minutes, let the sentences, let the words, let the promises we are reaffirming sink in a bit. Thank you. I'm not supposed to be here. Something that has been communicated to me as a woman in the church, an ordained woman in the church, a young ordained woman in the church, more than once. When I'm being really honest, it's a thought I've had more than once. In fact, it's exactly how I responded to God the first time God communicated that I should be ordained. I don't think that's for me. Nice joke, but no. And it would be lovely if I could tell you that I have gotten over that feeling every day, but I haven't. There are still days, moments, trying to make it shorter than a full day, where it definitely feels like I am not supposed to be here. How Peter begins. Not the section we read this morning. The writers of the lectionary have cut Peter down to sort of, I think, the hopeful bit they'd like us to focus on. But if you back up a few verses and translate it from sort of the more formal language the NRSV sometimes uses, that is what Peter says. And Peter is right. What we miss in how they have trimmed this part of Acts down for us is that Peter, faithful Jew, emerging leader of this emerging church, is really not supposed to be hanging out with Cornelius and his family. Cornelius, Roman citizen, centurion, translates historically into general in the occupying army of the Jewish people. They aren't supposed to be friends. They aren't supposed to talk much. And really, the other Jewish and Christian people would probably have preferred it if Peter had not shown up that day. So when Peter starts, "I'm not supposed to be here," that's not a flip comment. It's not something that should pass in a few seconds. It represents a really deep and really honest statement about the world in the days of Peter. And I think when we're being honest about our own world, there are plenty of places we aren't supposed to be, whether for social propriety or political expediency. It would be better if there were things we didn't do. We back up a bit in Peter's story, we realize something, though, because this section of Peter's story doesn't start in Cornelius' house. It starts on a rooftop with a vision. And that vision is the reason when Cornelius' messengers came to Peter, he decided Cornelius probably wasn't going to have him arrested or executed. Not today, at least. In a way, this is also what John tells Jesus. You're not supposed to be here. This isn't what is supposed to happen. You're the Messiah. I'm the forerunner. You should be baptizing me, not this vice versa upside down thing you seem to be asking for. And again, the NRSV sort of dresses up this language in a sort of unfortunate extent. For all righteousness, this is what we need to do. Jesus probably looked at his cousin and said something more like, God has been working for millennia to bring us to this point. This is what God's love wants us to do. Or maybe being cousins and about the same age, he just sort of looked at John like, come on, don't make me do this again. I don't know. But being out of place is definitely part of what is going on this morning. And that may seem like a weird theme for a day that's really supposed to be about baptism and bringing people into the church, supposed to be sort of hopeful and growth and all of these other things that I think we attribute to baptism. But I also think we all know how I feel. That there are days when we all think this isn't actually where we should be. That there's something painfully honest about standing in the waters of baptism and saying, I don't think I should be here. I'm too broken, too stubborn, too ornery. No one can actually love me enough for this to be true, and certainly not God, from whom I can't keep secrets. Maybe I can fool all of these other people who come to church, at least for an hour or two once a week, but certainly God knows that I don't belong here. I told you that Peter's story, we get the tail end of it, the speech he makes at the end of this whole segment. And it starts with a vision. It starts with Peter on a rooftop praying, and a vision where all of the unkosher foods are laid out before him. And the Spirit speaks and says, kill and eat. And Peter, a faithful Jew, knows this is what you do not do. Pray on a rooftop, sure, we're fine with that. Follow Jesus, we're working on figuring out how that all works. But these are foods God has forbidden God's faithful people to eat forever. Faithful Jews don't touch these animals. They don't raise them, they don't sell them, they don't kill them, they certainly don't eat them. In fact, they prefer to associate with people who also don't do any of those things. So Peter says, no, I would never do that. And God says, don't reject what I have made clean. Don't reject what I have made clean. It is on the strength of this vision that when Cornelius's messengers show up, Peter says, okay. When he walks into Cornelius's house, he starts with, I shouldn't be here. But he finishes with, but God's vision has told me that that might be wrong. When we are standing in our waters of baptism, when we are wrestling with the promises we have made and the hope they are rested on, that we are wrong. That God can, in fact, love us, even though we're pretty sure we shouldn't be here. This, God is still making this same statement to us that he made to Peter. Don't reject what I have made clean. Even when it means going somewhere we probably shouldn't be, whether for safety or for social or for political reasons, whether for reasons of our own struggle and our own self-knowledge, or because of centuries-long ethnic rivalries, those things that are seated so deeply in our culture, they are shocking to reconsider. Whatever passed between Jesus and John that day in the Jordan River, it ended the way it ended in Cornelius's house that morning. The way it has always ended, or maybe the way it has always begun. Every time people have come in fear and in hope to engage with God, to be baptized, to start this journey that sends you to strange and weird places that are often uncomfortable. With God blessing what has happened and reminding us that we are God's beloved, that our fears and our insecurities, that the forces of our personality and the facts of our history are never enough to change the fact that God loves us, that God has made us clean, that there are places to go where others need to be reminded of this too. Don't reject, God says, what I have made clean. For you are my beloved, with whom I am well pleased. Amen.